This is Free Radio Santa Cruz 96.
Thank you. That was Daryl Churning in his famous, or perhaps little-known tape, Timber, with Judy Berry and George Shook. We're going to be hearing some more of Daryl Churney throughout the next 2 hours. I'm here alone in the studio, but you're with me. This is Bathrobes Pier Robert Norse, and you're listening to Bathrobes Pier's Broadsides, Tales of Civil Liberties in Santa Cruz, on 96.3 FM, Free Radio Santa Cruz. Call-in number here, should you wish to join us for the next 2 hours, is 427-3772. We're interested in having you join us. The issues that we've been discussing for the last several months have ranged from the curfew that's being proposed at a countywide level, which will make it illegal for 18-year-olds, actually those under 18, to be out after 11 o'clock at night anywhere in the county, with the exception of the city of Santa Cruz, which has rejected that curfew, perhaps because there would be a youth insurrection if they even considered it. It's a wise decision in any case on their part. Other issues we'll be considering and following, doing updates on, although there's not too much to report, is the situation at the former Coral Street Shelter, which is, was of course, the campground that was denuded and fenced off and is now being blacktopped over. Or at least the plan is to blacktop it over for a 40 to 45 person trailer project run by the Community House Citizens Committee for the Homeless. Daryl Darling is the head of that project. We've had a few reports on Daryl and the fact that they're preparing the trailers to come south from Stanford. I'm going to be having a little trouble paying the workers who are apparently getting $5 an hour to do that kind of work. I mean, it's good that any kind of labor is available for homeless people, people who need work. And we're going to have updates on that as we continue following the story in the next few weeks. There is, of course, the ongoing story of Dragon Star Daniel Hopkins and apparently possibly some other homeless people who are appealing that permit for the Citizens Committee's Trailers Not Trolls project, as I call it, which will be displacing a 200-person campground for a 40, 45-person paying $200 to $600 a month transitional housing, clean and sober project, inappropriately located right next to emergency services, which are really needed for a campground, and which in essence kind of work against what a clean and sober facility with its own kitchen and so forth tries to do, namely get people clean and sober, how to do that right next to the free meal. And the Homeless Community Resource Center, which services the whole Santa Cruz population, is a mystery and has never really been addressed either by the Citizens Committee, by the City Council, or by anybody else, as far as I know, except the critics who pointed out that it's a strange place to locate that kind of a project. Not only does it displace hundreds of people who need shelter and will have no shelter, who have no shelter now, and even more who will have no shelter on March 15th or 16th when the Armory closes down, at least closes down as a nightly availability for the 80 to 150 people who use it. So there's that issue. We're going to be following that. I'm also going to kind of do some updates on other issues we don't normally spend too much time on. Wait a minute. We have an incoming phone call here that I'd like to apologize for not taking.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
I'm on the air?
You are on the air, sir.
I just wanted to say that you better put back that Just Kidding tape that you snaked from the station on Friday.
Snaked?
What? Snaked. I left that for the station. I came back and it was gone.
I thought it was a personal gift.
No, I wouldn't give you a personal gift of such that nature, man.
Oh, dear.
Those are hard to come by.
Okay, well, I'll have to then contact the big people in Southern California that I sold it to, but we'll have to get it back to you.
Your life's hanging on the line here.
So what else is happening on the streets, Phil? We're talking to Phil Free.
Well, I don't know what's happening on the streets. I'm obviously at a phone.
You're a musician as well as a rabble-rouser, and anything cooking out there?
The rabble needs much rousing.
Indeed.
Yes.
Okay, so nothing particular to report, eh?
It's not raining.
Well, that sounds like another one of those rousers. It's a very rousing morning, it sounds like.
Yes, well, I hope you're roused.
I'm not quite roused, but if you send in appropriate people, I could get roused.
You're aroused.
Hopefully.
I'll talk to you later.
Is that your twin over there? I'll talk to you later.
So that's the Dobbsy twins, Phil and Bob, who occasionally call in with some arousing comments. My apologies to Phil, for indeed I took that tape. He had the Just Kiddin' band that Phil plays with has done some great satirical songs about downtown Santa Cruz, including the famous Hospitality Nazis song, which has won plaudits all over the city, including even among the hosts themselves of the song Targets. The hosts are the green-shirted move-along artists that rally the merchants have hired to keep people from littering the streets with their lifestyles and bodies and so forth. And Phil has his own show, as does Skidmark's Bob, another musician, who's the second voice you heard on the air. Yeah, lots of little updates, which I want to kind of begin with. What have I got here? Well, there's a lot of stuff about the curfew that is kind of related. Curfew materials is beginning to make its way into the media. For instance, in today's Mercury News, in the second section, there's a headline, Morgan Hill to weigh curfew for teens. Is that right? Is it Morgan Hill? Yeah, it is Morgan Hill. And here's how the story reads. It's by Dale Rodboff, Mercury News staff reporter. 16 months after naming a task force to find ways to get teenagers off the streets at night, Morgan Hill City Council members on Wednesday will discuss a curfew. Less than spirited community support and a lack of funds for police and other services stalled the task force for about a year, said Police Chief Steve Schwab. But after an increase in auto burglaries, vandalism, and graffiti downtown, a behind-the-scenes effort to create a curfew similar to the one in San Jose started about 6 months ago, Schwab said. The program, devised by city officials, counselors from the Bridge Social Services Agency, and the city's Gang Awareness Task Force, will go to the council on Wednesday, Schwab said. I guess that's tomorrow. The program would include a curfew for youngsters under 18 years old, a volunteer-staffed center at Britton Middle School where parents could pick up curfew violators, and counseling, Schwab said. A good percentage of auto burglaries and graffiti can be attributed to teenagers, Schwab said. He said that graffiti has escalated from spray painting to etching windows. Police can turn their attention to vandalism and the teen curfew, Schwab said, because most violent crime has decreased with more officers on the street. Through grants and other funding sources, the department has restored a number of jobs lost 4 years ago during a budget crisis. Council support for a curfew apparently will depend on what is proposed. I'm willing to look at a curfew because of what is going on downtown. A curfew could be used when kids are just hanging out, but it would be a last resort because I'm against harassing kids who are going home from a job, returning from a school function, who have been visiting friends, Councilmember Joe Martucci said. Martucci recalled that as a teenager in Fresno, he was stopped by police about three times a month while bicycling home from his late shift at a gasoline station. Mayor John Varela has questions regarding how a curfew would work, but the situation downtown is serious. And San Jose's curfew program, which Morgan Hill has been monitoring, seems to be working, he said. All the components are in place. We could have a curfew in place by spring, Varela said. Gilroy has had a curfew for more than 20 years, but the ordinance has been revised to include a center where parents can pick up their children, said Captain Greg Guisiana, head of field operations at the Gilroy Police Department. The curfew applies to those under 18. In San Jose, youngsters under 16 can be out until 10 p.m., while those over 16 have until 11:30 p.m. In Palo Alto, the curfew hours for anyone under 18 are 11 p.m. to 6 a.m. weeknights and 1 a.m. to 6 a.m. weekends, except on every third Friday under a full moon. Well, no, just kidding, folks. That's the San Jose Mercury News talking about the proposed Morgan Hill curfew. Morgan Hill is a small town around the vicinity of Gilroy in, it's east of us by about, 30 or 40 miles on Highway 101, kind of northeast, actually. I'm not quite sure where Gilroy is if I were to start walking, but I could get there by car. It's all the rage, these curfews, and as all of you know who've been listening to this show regularly, Santa Cruz County itself has a curfew, which is essentially a done deal, rolling at us like a juggernaut, steamrolling right down the pike. which will be hitting the Board of Supervisors on February 13th. And if you want to follow that, you should show up there around 8:30 or 9 in the morning. That's a week from Tuesday, as the saying goes, and in fact, as the fact goes in this situation. You want to talk about the curfew, we do have an open line at 427-3772. And while I'm thinking about it, I want to bring up the major event of the day that I failed to mention at the beginning of the hour, which is the trial of Robbie Berlin. And I'm going to be reviewing that by reading an earlier Sentinel story about Robbie, which I brought with me today, and also kind of playing an interview with Ed Fry, who's his attorney, and who will be beginning jury selection in the Robbie Berlin felony marijuana cultivation case this afternoon at 2 o'clock in Department 4 down at the County Courthouse, which is at 701 Ocean Street, for those of you who've had the good fortune never to go down there. That's the Robbie Berlin case, and that's a case that many of us are concerned about. Free Radio Santa Cruz Collective met last night, and among other things, that issue was raised as a matter of concern. Robbie's grows marijuana for medicinal purposes. As you know, we have a user's club here in town, a medical marijuana center, where people who need marijuana can buy it and actually, or work for it for their ailments. Marijuana is a recognized medicine among those who are not receiving payoffs from the federal government or twisted by the police propaganda on this issue. I suppose there are some people who genuinely disagree with that, but I haven't heard from them. I haven't heard from any intelligent people who actually claim that there is no medical use for marijuana. Anyway, this issue is going to be raised at a public trial where a man will be fighting for his liberty, and he'll be defended by attorney Ed Fry. And that's going to happen in today's downtown courtrooms, right across the river from downtown Santa Cruz, 701 Ocean Street in Department 4. Judge Kelsey is the judge who will be hearing the case. It was continued from several weeks ago when Kelsey wanted to make sure that he would get sufficient medical testimony that would allow the defense to put on what's called necessity defense. And the necessity defense, for those of you who don't know what it is a defense that essentially argues, yeah, we did something illegal, but there were greater needs and concerns that allowed us to do that, and it made that something that, on the basis of which the jury should say not guilty. And hopefully that necessity defense will be allowed, and actually Ed Fry gave us an interview about it several weeks ago and talked about the six elements of that defense. But here's an incoming call.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz?
Yeah, hi, Robert. How you doing?
Well, it sounds like Bob LaMonica to me.
Yeah, it is. I got a comment about the Free Radio meeting last night.
Uh-huh.
What was the relevance of the Robbie Berlin issue at a Free Radio Santa Cruz meeting? I bring this up in all sincerity.
Sure.
Everybody in that room supports Mr. Berlin and certainly Ed Fry's efforts to defend Robbie Berlin. But to have it essentially dominate a business meeting for Free Radio Santa Cruz is the height of absurdity. And I use my 30 seconds on the air to point that out.
No, well, you get as much time as you need, Bob. Yeah, that was a criticism which I believe Skidmark's Bob also had, and which others, at least three of you mentioned to me.
It was pure grandstanding.
Uh-huh. Well, I guess I'm sympathetic to the use of that time because of my feeling that the issue is an immediate one, like the next day. And it's true that, you don't usually bring up general political concerns for the support of the collective. I mean, it could have been, perhaps it should have been phrased that way to say that.
Well, possibly at the close of the meeting,
uh-huh.
Right, for those that might have been interested, it might have been an appropriate time to bring it up. But in the midst of a business meeting regarding Free Radio Santa Cruz, to grandstand this issue is the height of hypocrisy, and I'm going to point that out, and I was not the only one that felt that way last night.
No, you weren't.
I walked out during that session of the meeting.
I remember, yeah.
Okay.
Well, I have to admit to being a collaborator in this issue is being brought up, because I specifically came down for this issue because we were talking about doing a jury nullification project, and I thought I got the impression that there were people in the collective, including Ed, who was running the meeting, Ed Fry, who wanted to start flyering on the steps of the courthouse the juries so as to raise the issue of the right of the juries to say not guilty, even if the facts and the law state that yes, indeed, he grew that devil marijuana and all that sort of thing.
Well, once again, you know, this does not fit in the midst of a Free Radio Santa Cruz meeting. If there were people that were interested after the meeting or in a totally separate situation, well, that's fine. But to discuss these issues in the very midst of a Free Radio meeting is the height of hypocrisy and co-opting and grandstanding.
Well, I think that when Bob raised the issue, we all quickly shut up on the issue, so that it really was raised in the absence of objection. And I think that had, for example, you raised the issue earlier and said, I don't want to talk about this now, put it at the end of the meeting, please.
I did raise it when it hit the agenda at the beginning of the meeting.
Oh, really?
I said one sentence, and then I backed off basically for the rest of the meeting. And like I said, I walked out during that session of the meeting. You know, hey, it's, like I said, I mean, I think I've said enough, pure grandstanding. It was a co-opting of the meeting. And if these things can't be pointed out in nice ways, then we need to find nice ways to point these things out, at least in my opinion.
Well, I'm not averse to your pointing it out.
And like I said, I was far from being the only person that saw clearly that this was wrong.
Well, the next meeting, I guess, is what, 2 weeks from yesterday, a week from Sunday coming up?
Right.
And I guess we're still going to be meeting in the same place, and that issue can be raised again. I think it's true, there were lots of people at this meeting because the Metro Santa Cruz's recent story, I think, drew at least four or five new programmers into the scene, and I guess they were patient enough to wait for the 10 or 15 minutes when we did kind of talk about this issue with Robbie Berlin and his trial today and look for people who wanted to do jury nullification. And I suspect you're probably right, Bob, in the sense that it was not...
It was totally inappropriate, and if there was any appropriateness at all for that issue, it would have been after the business had been conducted. Totally after. Totally inappropriate. Total grandstanding.
Right.
Total co-opting.
Well, having said that, and I think we can probably bring that back to the meeting for further discussion if you'd like, is there anything on, and I don't want to shut you up on this, but is there any other topics you want to go on about?
Well, no, I think it would be... I could, but at a later point. I mean, there are. This is going to be a hot political year in Santa Cruz. There's no
mm-hmm.
question about it.
Mm-hmm.
Not only in Santa Cruz, but in the whole country.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're at a point as a society where we can truly make a great leap forward based upon some very basic things, which is the individual recognizing their participatory role. Now, I'm engaged in certain activities here locally for the main part because I feel that they can engage and empower people. And some of them are going to come to a new level of fruition this week. And in fact, you got a show on Friday. I'll call in on Friday if you like.
Sounds good.
All right, Robert, take care. Thank you for letting me get on the air.
Sure, Bob.
All right.
Bye-bye.
And there it is. Controversy 24 hours a day on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. You're listening to Bathrob Spears Broadsides, Civil Rights for the Poor in Santa Cruz, and even the Not-So-Poor.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Wow, that's cool. We're controversial even off the air, man. Even what we do in our meetings is controversy.
That's exciting stuff.
But do the listeners give a shit?
Not much.
That's what I wonder. But you know that free radio people listen to free radio.
Hopefully,
except for people like the Funkin' A show. But other than that, you know, a lot of free radio people listen to free radio, so that's really cool to hear these issues brought up. And I would like to go in agreement with Mr. LaMonica to some degree. I think this happens too often with free radio. We get distracted from the business of conducting a radio station because we have all these political causes that want to come in the meeting and like use the meeting as a way to sway people to their political cause. And if anybody listens to Free Radio Santa Cruz, they know that we have a lot of stuff that we need to do to keep the station running properly, and most of it doesn't get done.
Mm.
So we need to spend time with this kind of stuff at the meetings and run a radio station.
And that's exactly what I intend to do here.
Yes.
Any comments on either the curfew, the upcoming trial of Robbie Berlin, or anything on the streets?
No, I think it's I don't know, it's the same show every week, and I heard something different for a change, so I called in.
Oh, yeah.
See you later.
Well, we'll try to give you more variety.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Okay.
Yeah, it's true. We tend to focus on the same issues. Let's see what else we got here. Kind of try to do a little different, a little the same. And regarding that trial of Robbie, I don't know if anybody else has brought it up. Probably somebody has. Today's San Francisco Examiner has a story: religious views of Rastafarians ruled valid in pot charge defense. This is something that perhaps, who knows, maybe will be raised in the marijuana trial this week here in Santa Cruz County. It's a story: court overturns possession verdicts by Bob Agelko. Rastafarians can use their religious belief that marijuana is a sacrament as a defense against a charge of possessing marijuana, a federal appeals court has ruled. The 9th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals in San Francisco overturned three marijuana possession convictions Friday because the judge had barred evidence of the defendants' religious views. The court upheld the convictions and the prison sentences of seven defendants on drug trafficking and related charges. The possession charges were a small part of a case against members of an organization accused of conspiring to import thousands of pounds of marijuana from Mexico to Billings, Montana for a decade. The alleged leader, Cameron Best, convicted of operating a continuing criminal enterprise, was sentenced to 35 years in prison in 1994, a sentence that the court left intact. But the ruling was significant for its overturning of a drug conviction based on a 1993 law, the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, which strengthened defenses against criminal prosecutions that interfere with religious practices. The court did not cite any previous appellate decision that had used the Religious Freedom Restoration Act to reverse a drug conviction, and a lawyer who has been a longtime advocate of liberalizing drug laws said he was unaware of any such ruling. This is a legitimate religious issue for Rastafarians, said attorney Kevin Zisi, leader of Common Sense for Drug Policy, a group based in Washington, D.C. They can't reach an appropriate religious state without ganja, marijuana. It's like taking the wine out of the Catholic Church. Rastafarianism, which originated in Jamaica, considers marijuana to be a religious sacrament that brings believers closer to divinity and enhances their spiritual unity, the court said. Assistant U.S. Attorney James Sikora declined to comment on the ruling. The 1993 law was passed in response to a 1990 Supreme Court ruling that allowed a peyote prosecution despite a claim that the use of the drug was central to a Native American religion. The law requires the government to prove a compelling justification for any prosecution that substantially burdens the defendant's exercise of religion. The law was signed by President Clinton during the Montana trial in November 1993 and was cited by three defendants, Calvin Triber, Don Meeks, and Lexi Bauer, in seeking dismissal of marijuana possession charges. U.S. District Judge Jack Shanstrom found that the law against marijuana substantially burdened the Rastafarian religion, but he barred evidence of the defendant's religious purposes and upheld the convictions. He cited earlier rulings that said the government had an overriding interest in regulating marijuana. But the appeals court said the 1993 law required prosecutors to show that the government has a compelling interest not only in regulating marijuana, but also in prosecuting these particular defendants for possession of the drug. Because no such proof was offered and the evidence of religious practices was barred, the convictions must be reversed, the court said. That's religious views of Rastafarians ruled valid in pot charge defense. Case overturns possession verdicts in today's San Francisco Examiner. Again, I guess that doesn't really bear on the trial today because the issue of religion is not being raised. But of course, it's still a significant expansion, maybe we might say it's at least a foot in the door on one level for the use of marijuana for certain purposes. But again, we're talking about the limited use of marijuana and the use of marijuana for very specific and limited purposes. Here, we're talking about medical uses. We're not talking about recreational use, and we're not talking about abuse. In fact, we have one of the notorious defendant himself has just slipped into the studio, Robbie Berlin here, or Robbie Berlin, I should say. And let's see if we can talk to this criminal before they haul him away and jail him for, what, 2 to 5 or something? What are you facing?
Yeah, well, I'm not really sure. I guess if they had it in their mind and they got a little pissed off that I pushed the issue and I didn't just accept the fact that I was a criminal. Maybe 2 years, maybe 6 months, maybe 3 months. Maybe we're going to win.
Now, have you been previously tried for any kind of so-called drug offense?
No, never. First time.
And how long have you been using marijuana?
Well, I think the first time was when I was 18 years old.
And was that recreational use or medical use?
Well, when I first came to California at 18, I think the actual first time was more on a recreational use. After using it a few times, I recognized right away as a youngster that it had serious medical aspects. I had migraine headaches as a youth, and it definitely started to help me with those right away. So mostly recreational, and then I kind of dropped it mostly just for the medicinal and spiritual aspects as I got older. That was about 20 years ago.
Wow. So you actually, when did you begin, or did you, do you in fact now use marijuana regularly for certain medical conditions you have?
Yes, exactly. I have a birth defect in my spine, which about 8 years ago started causing me serious painful conditions. To this day, I live in pain 24 hours a day. I have a muscle mass formed on my spine. My spine's crooked. I have two spots in my spine. There's severe pain. I'm lucky I'm not crippled. Actually, I've been crippled 3 times with this thing, already flat on my back.
So we're talking about, you smoke marijuana or do you ingest it?
Well, mostly smoking it, although I have used it in teas and in some baked products. But mostly it's a smoking thing, and it with this kind of pain, I've been given all kind of muscle relaxers and all kinds of codeine and Tylenol and aspirin and all that business to where my system, because I'm a vegetarian and live the way I do, is very sensitive, and I can't tolerate that business. This is a problem we have to live with for many years to come, and the marijuana helps me to manage the pain, and that's a fact of life. It also enhances my spiritual meditations, which all in all help to heal the whole healing process, help with the healing process. So, yeah.
Well, we're talking to Robbie Berlin, who, as you may know if you've been listening to the show, or perhaps you don't if you just tuned in, is going on trial today for his liberty. He has 2 felony counts against him for, what, some 50-odd plants that were seized by here in the Santa Cruz County area. He's going to be defended by Sheriff... He's going to be attacked by the sheriff. Maybe he'll be ignored, but he's going to be defended by attorney Ed Fry, who has tried drug cases several decades ago and is now re-entering the arena. Ed is a rather controversial figure locally in some circles. He's run against a district attorney, Art Danner, twice, getting a larger percentage of the vote. And the second time, he's sought to have, he supported the Art Danner recall. He's also sued Art Danner in court in a case that is currently tied up where the district attorney has used county money to pay off an employee, Catherine Gardner, who was essentially fired, and for she was paid for, what, 4 months beyond that time, conveniently during the time of his election, the election campaign by the DA, Art Danner. And Fry is trying to reclaim that money for the public as part of a class action suit, and that's all been tied up in all kinds of superior court maneuvering because Art Danner has hired some pretty fancy heavy artillery on the legal side. But let's get back to your case, Robbie. And for those of you who are listening and want to talk to Robbie, you can give a call here to 427-3772 or 427-FRSC if you have trouble with numbers. That's Free Radio Santa Cruz, and that's the call-in number for 96.3 FM, which is what you're listening to, Free Radio Santa Cruz. Do give a call, because I'm sure that even if you just want to support Robbie, he'd be really appreciative to hear that there are people out there who give a damn about what's going on. He's facing a lot of time, and he's also... this is really the first such case in quite a while in this county where someone actually comes right out and says, yeah, you're not disputing, trying to say, well, there was an illegal search. You're not saying, well, that there were, you know, you weren't there at the time, it wasn't you. You're saying it was me, I did it, and I did it because it needed to be done for medical purposes for myself and others.
Right, exactly, and that's not only for myself and others, but there's also the element of sales involved. I was growing it for myself initially, and as I got into growing it, others wanted it, I gave it away, and eventually started selling it, and that's a big part of this court case, and the fact that I've sold to other people for medicinal purposes, and I've actually sold to the marijuana clinic here in town, and through other people selling to the clinic in San Francisco. So there's a serious element of, if we're going to have medical marijuana, where's it going to come from, and who is going to be able to supply it and actually benefit financially from it besides the government. Right now the government has a $70 million a year the pharmaceutical company selling synthetic THC known as mannitol. And
Marinol,
I'm sorry. Marinol, you're right. Mm-hmm. And so they're going to be asking me how I was making my living and why I had $7,000 in the house. And the fact is that I was growing marijuana and others needed it and wanted it. And I was doing a service for many people in great need. People with AIDS were even winding up with that marijuana. And part of what is going to happen in this jury trial is that the jury is going to have the right, which is rightfully theirs, to decide the facts. The facts are, yes, I was growing and I was selling marijuana, but that it was not legal. That law prevents me. The law is not legal from preventing me to do that. And because of the necessity of others, and my own necessity is a lesser harm than breaking the law itself, I am forced into breaking the law, and many people like me. And so now, not only do they have to start freeing up the laws for possession, but we have to start freeing up the law so people can legally pass it back and forth. So
yeah, it doesn't mean much if you can't pass it on to someone else.
No, it doesn't. It's a very expensive process to deal with, and there's a lot of money involved. And see, we still give it away, and we still sell it at below market values. We want all that stuff to come down. And once it's legal, things are going to change. There's not going to be the criminal element that's involved. There's not going to be the high prices. There's not going to be a lot of that business. And, you know, the facts are the facts. And if you really check into it, you find out how this whole prohibition thing got started and what they really are afraid of. And people are eventually going to start opening up, I think, and coming out of the closet, so to speak. But yeah, we go to trial here in about 15 minutes. I'm on my way over there. 11 o'clock is the first, we have some kind of proceeding. The district attorney's been trying to prevent us from bringing the medical defense up the whole time. And they're trying to stop some of our witnesses, expert witnesses. They don't want the knowledge spread to the jury of this, the truth of how we are in this situation. They only want to present the so-called facts, but they're leaving a lot of the facts out, and I think my ability to tell the truth about the situation is going to allow some of the facts to come out anyway. And the other people who are involved, Ed Fry and the other witnesses and the doctors, the truth is going to come out, and it's going to be left in the hearts of the jury. And in the first jury trial back in 1794, the jury was instructed by the Supreme Court that not only did they have a right to judge the facts, but they had a right to judge the law. And over time, that has been taken away from the jury, and the jury doesn't even really know that. And actually, it's against the law for me to stand up there and tell them, or my lawyer to tell them that that is the case. And so we're hoping that this jury here in Santa Cruz is educated enough to know that this war on drugs, this war on people, basically, has to stop. And we have to begin a treaty, a peace treaty with our government to stop this madness. And in the 90s, I see just what's happening here. The courtrooms are where the law is going to change. It doesn't happen in legislation anymore. The juries are going to have to become knowledgeable and prevent these illegal laws from taking place. And so, see you in the courtroom. Come if you can, and if you can't come, please listen to the radio the next week, because it will be day-by-day discussions, and your prayers are helpful.
Robbie, before you go, can you give the audience a phone number or an address that they can send contributions to, or they can offer support one way or another to?
Yes, we're definitely open to that. There's a phone number, 408-457-0908, and that's for the Marijuana Defense Fund that has been started out of this, and we're going to help others in the same situation when this is over. And with the jury education, the whole bit, we got a lot of work to do. So once again, 457-0908, and they'll give you addresses from there.
All right. Robbie, I wish you luck. And again, this hearing is going to be some motions about the medical marijuana defense. So it might be of interest to those who kind of want to follow this more closely. So hustle your heinies down to courtroom four right away.
And then again at 2 o'clock for jury selection, which is a very interesting process.
Right. The jury will be asked questions to determine how prejudiced it is or isn't. Unfortunately, much of that has been taken away from the lawyers and is now in the hands of the judge. But still, it's interesting to watch. I don't want to keep you, Robbie. You've got 15 minutes.
Go.
So good luck to you. And please let us know. Give us a call at 423-HUFF later today with a kind of an update. Yeah, and we'll play that.
We'll do that.
All right. And if anybody wants to call in and talk about this, though Robbie is leaving the studio, you can still discuss it with the community of Santa Cruz through the airwaves. And the phone number is 427-3772, 427 for Radio Santa Cruz. Now, Robbie was talking about the rights of the jury back in how they were taken away. They initially started in the first trial in the 1794, allowed for juries to say, hey, that law sucks, we say not guilty, even if the judge says we have to follow the law. I'm going to read you a little article that I picked up 5 years ago from High Times magazine called Jury Power by Lynn and Judy Osborne. I think you might find it interesting. It's about this whole issue of what's called jury nullification, which is the process of the jury saying no, even though the judge and the judicial system says yes. And we're talking, it's often been of significance in cases where the government wants to railroad people for different reasons, or where unjust laws have been passed and are being enforced, and juries are being told, well, you may not agree with the law, but you have to pass it. I mean, you have to rule not guilty or guilty depending on the facts, not the law. Your business is simply to see if this person violated the law. You leave the punishment, you leave the morality of the law to us. And the claim of people who are concerned with the real rights of the jury and the reality of it is the jury is in some sense the fourth branch of government. You have the legislature, the courts, and you have the president and the executive and the district attorneys enforcing the law. But you also have the people. The people, we are the people. This is really where it reaches us, the juries. We can decide, regardless of what these three other branches have done, regardless of how many lobbyists have gotten together to pass a law, and how many corrupt judges or compliant judges have gotten on the bench, and no matter how many, ambitious DAs are engaging in, putting notches on their drug war belt, the juries can still say no. Anyway, here's this article. See what you think. The Fully Informed Jury Amendment Initiative, called FIJA, is a grassroots movement intended to compel state governments to require that judges tell juries of their power, right, and responsibility to judge whether a law is unjust or misapplied. FIJA, Fully Informed Jury Amendment, requires jurors to be allowed to hear evidence about the defendant's motives and would reaffirm their authority to acquit or convict.